Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guests today are here to provide a preview of the upcoming legislative session in New York State. I'm joined by Rachel May, the newly elected senator for New York's 53rd Senate District, and Bill Magnarelli, the assemblyman representing New York's 129th Assembly District. He was first elected in 1998. I should note that they are both Democrats, and while we are explicitly nonpartisan on this program and will continue to host Republicans as well as Democrats, I thought that since both houses of the state legislature are clearly majority Democratic control, it made sense today to hear from members of that party for our thinking about what is likely to come on the legislative agenda. So I want to welcome both of you, and congratulations on your recent election and your recent reelection.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you very much.
So let me start, and Assemblyman Magnarelli, I'll start with you. Given the political landscape right now in the state and also the early signals that the governor has been giving in some of his speeches, what would you expect would be the things that are going to top the legislative agenda this year?
Well, I think, first of all, the things that top the agenda every year revolve around the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the most important thing as we start a year. However, I think there's also a lot of things that have been bouncing around the legislature for a number of years that I think now that we have a Democratic Senate as well as a Democratic Assembly, I think we're going to be able to move those, including the Reproductive Health Act,
mm-hmm.
Some gun safety proposals that the governor has made, voting reforms, hopefully closing the LLC loophole finally, and, you know, older things that I remember running in, I don't know if it was 2008 or 2010. I was called Bathroom Bill for a while because of the LGBT rights bill that we probably can pass now. It passed the Assembly way back when. Legalizing marijuana might come up this year.
That we're hearing a lot of.
Sports betting may come up this year. The list goes on and on. So there's a lot of things that we've been considering for many, many years that I think will come to the fore as we go along. But the first things first, we have to have a budget.
I want to come back to that question about the budget. But, Senator May, let me ask you. You ran as an insurgent challenger to the status quo. That was clearly what your campaign was about. Does the agenda that Assemblyman Magnarelli just described, does that sound about right to you as a start toward a new status quo?
Absolutely. I mean, I ran partly to make sure that the legislature could pass a lot of bills that have been passing in the Assembly for years. And so I'm hopeful that we will see that happen this year.
Is there anything in the list that the assemblyman put forward that would be most important to you in terms of thinking about the kind of group of progressive Democrats that came into the Senate and really turned the Senate completely Democratic in terms of majority control, and also I think shifted to sort of the center of weight politically in that body as well? Is there anything there that's most important to you that you want to see passed?
Well, there are a couple of things that we're talking about trying to bring up as early as possible, and the Reproductive Health Act is one.
Mm-hmm.
The election reform is very important to everybody who was newly elected this year, but also to a lot of the people in the Senate who've been there a long time. And I've talked with Dustin Czarny, our Democratic Elections Commissioner here in mm-hmm. Onondaga County, and one of the things he said is if we want to implement anything that changes the election calendar in 2019, we have to do it in January, basically, because the calendar gets backed up. You know, every piece of the calendar depends on the next piece. And so I think there's going to be pressure to do things like early voting, try to bring them up early.
And so Assemblyman Magnarelli, on that point, you had a pretty extensive list there. Which ones of those things do you think have the highest probability to actually get passed, or do all of them, all the ones that you listed, which ones are you most certain will become law?
I think they all have a very good possibility of getting passed right now, with the Senate having become Democratic. But I think the Reproductive Health Act, as the senator mentioned, I think that probably will be the first thing that we pass. I think it's been long overdue. I think there's a lot of strength and force behind it, and I think that that's something that we're going to want to do. And the voting reforms, I think that most of those, many of those will happen. I think it's about time. You know, for example, primary day. Like, let's put that together. I don't want to have all these primaries, and you know, some of that stuff needs to be done. Early voting, automatic registration, I think has a shot. Merging the state and federal primaries. I think those are things that can be done relatively quickly.
And our listeners, a lot of them probably already know this, but just to sort of cover the base here, could you just give a very brief synopsis of what the Reproductive Health Act does?
Well, basically, it codifies Roe v. Wade, protects our state from whatever craziness happens on the federal level, and makes sure that abortion laws are not in the penal law anymore, but in our health laws, and making sure that we're taking care of the health and well-being of women. And I think that's basically it in a nutshell, nothing more, nothing less.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with two members of the New York State Legislature, Senator Rachel May and Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli. So let me come back to the topic of government reform and voting reform and ethics. Something that you both have talked about here this morning. It does seem to me to be in a very good position for some major changes, and maybe what will make them major is the accumulation of all the different things, Assemblyman, that you ticked off just a minute ago. But it does seem like there's a pent-up demand for it, and there was evidence, I think, that it was a factor in the elections as well, both the primary elections and the general elections. One of the things that's obviously attractive about it is it doesn't cost a lot necessarily compared to some of the other things that we still are going to talk about, changes that might be made. So I guess the question I put, and Senator, I put it to you first. I'm wondering whether this could actually be kind of a golden year in New York State history for ethics and reform, sort of a real turning point if we're able to do all these things.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we have seen in the Senate anyway, there are new senators who are going to be chairing the Ethics Committee and the Committee on Investigations, and they are very energetic and active. So I think combined with election reform, campaign finance reform has to be a big part of that if it's going to affect our public ethics, I think. And that combined with some oversight would make a huge difference in the way that people view our government. I think one of the things I ran against was the kind of cynicism that people bring toward our politics because they just think it's broken and can't be fixed. And I'm more of an optimist than that, and I really think we have an opportunity.
What kinds of things in terms of how the legislature works and how government works, separate that from elections for a moment, but of course they're connected. What kinds of things in that area would you think might be on the agenda and have a chance this year?
Trying to separate it from the elections. I've been more focused on the elections, so things like lowering the limits on contributions and getting rid of that LLC loophole that enables people to just give massive amounts. Those are really important and would change, I think, the way the legislature works as well as the way people view the legislature. I think in the longer term, I am in favor of having legislators be considered full-time legislators and not be getting considerable outside income. I know that's contentious and there are still decisions to be made about that, but I do think the more that we can show that this is our primary job and this is what we came to Albany to do, that I think that will make a difference, too, in the way people see the legislature.
Assemblyman, let me ask you a version of that question. So the senator just brought up the issue of salaries and full-time legislature limits on outside income, so there's that. But then there's also this piece that is, it seems to me, is likely to be on the agenda of trying to provide more teeth and ethics and oversight of the body itself. And there's some proposals to to bolster that and take some of that outside of the political sphere, if possible. And that, so, could you do you see much happening in that area?
I'm very confused about that, in the sense that the things that have been brought up and why people have gone to jail, okay, from the legislature, Senate, Assemblyman, it wasn't because they violated their ethics, of course, but what it was criminal. And what I don't think...
And federal charges, for the most part.
That's one of the arguments that gets made. But my argument is that we do have an apparatus to take care of that. It's called a criminal justice system. We have district attorneys. We have an attorney general. We have a federal government. If people are breaking the law, they should be punished. And they should go to jail. And I have absolutely no sympathy for any of them. Okay? So that's the bottom line. But ethics is a different ballgame. And doing the right thing within the House and following the rules, that's what the ethics committees, et cetera, were all about. When we're talking about criminality, that's a different ballgame. And I don't believe any ethics laws are going to change that. If you're going to take a bag full of money from somebody to do something, you're going to do that no matter what the ethics laws are, because you're breaking the criminal laws. And, my feeling is that we should bolster the people that are looking into those things in terms of if there are investigations or if they need money to look into them. I don't have a problem with any of that, as long as it's done on a criminal basis. I think we're just going around and around. It's a great buzzword for a lot of organizations to keep harping on ethics, when really what we're talking about is criminality.
Mm. And so this proposal to try to change the structure of what is now the JCOPE, the Commission on Ethics, that you don't see that then as leading terribly in a productive direction to change things?
I don't
things.
Because no matter what you do or what committee you set up, it's political. Mm. Bottom line, no matter how you do it, you show me how it's not political. Somebody's got to appoint somebody. It's political. And I'll tell you one thing. I'm very against giving up any power of the legislature, because we have very little as it stands right now. And giving the governor and the executive more power over the legislature, to me, is wrong. And people better start looking at that, especially in New York State, because it's becoming a very heavy-handed executive. And we're not able to do our jobs the way they should be done.
Senator, how do you see this issue of ethics within the body and what the limits are here?
Well, I'm going to disagree some about ethics. As a woman, I have to say sexual harassment is a real problem, and it's a way of wielding power. And it doesn't necessarily cross the line into criminality, but it makes a big difference in the way power is organized and wielded within the body. And so it disturbs me greatly that there have been sexual harassment accusations that never seem to have been investigated, or if they were, there was nothing reported out about it. And I think we need to get past that, especially now that women make up a much larger portion of the legislature. I think we need to see that we are being treated fairly, and that when we are not, we can bring that forward and have it be something that is investigated. So ethics at that level, just how interpersonal and intergroup power dynamics are wielded within the body, that is really important that we get that right.
Yeah. I just want to say I don't disagree with that. I do believe that our ethics rules right now would take care of that. Whether they were implemented and used in the past is something that I can agree with the senator on. They haven't been, and they should be. I do believe that our ethics committee chair in the assembly is a woman this time around, and I have a feeling that we're going to see these changes happen.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with two members of the New York State Legislature, Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli and Senator Rachel May, and we've been discussing the upcoming legislative session. Assemblyman Magnarelli, at the beginning you mentioned the budget obviously is the single biggest thing on the agenda every year, so question about that. How are the state's finances shaping up, and are there any major changes in the way the budget is put together that you would expect to see this year?
Well, first of all, the initial indications are that we have a budget gap of anywhere up to $3 billion that okay. we're going to have to make up. So, and maybe that's gotten a little bit better. I'll know more when I get to Albany. I hope so. But I don't the second part of that question
Are there any major changes in the structure of the budget that you would anticipate for this year? Big differences from the past?
I don't think so. Think it still boils down to the health care, education, mm-hmm. Economic development. It's going to be the same types of things. We've got a lot of infrastructure and transportation problems that are going to have to be dealt with. My new committee chairmanship is going to keep me very busy, I think.
And tell our listeners what that position is.
Chairman of the Committee on Transportation. So we have a lot of problems with New York City and the MTA. We have a lot of problems in upstate New York as well with mass transit, infrastructure, roads, bridges. So there's a, I think it's going to be the same things. It's tough to get through those 3 months. It's pretty grueling experience.
It's a sprint, it looks like, from the outside.
Yeah, it is. It's fast, and it's very much intense, in terms of you got to get it done. So I think the governor has positioned himself to make sure that the legislature gets it done one way or the other. So then these are some of the problems that I see between the governor and the legislature. So
Senator May, one budget issue I think that might create some of those issues that the assemblyman just referred to, particularly between the governor and progressive Democrats, is education and the formula that's actually used to fund different school districts. And the governor has said recently that the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, that lawsuit, that specifically called for more funding for New York City, but by extension calls for more funding for other poor school districts. He said that case is closed, that matter is settled, and he compared in a recent interview, he compared folks that are still pushing for that case and something to come out of it as analogous to people who claim the world is flat. Those were his words, not mine. So at the same time, however, the governor has indicated that he's supportive of providing more funding for poor school districts. So it's possible, I would think, that maybe this gets done on kind of a more individual school district basis. I'm not sure how that would work. But the reason why I wanted to put this question to you is this was one of the issues you ran on, the funding for poor school districts in Syracuse in particular. And you represent both poor districts and well-off school districts that are in your Senate district. So how optimistic are you, I guess, to boil all this down to the bottom line, how optimistic are you that Syracuse is going to see some kind of substantial increase in its school funding this year?
I'm fairly optimistic, mainly because so many of us came in on this platform as well. And I think we are going to have a united voice in the Senate pushing for a real change in the way schools are funded. In terms of getting the additional $2 billion that the state school leaders have indicated are necessary, if we have a $3 billion gap to fill, that's going to be a big challenge. And so I think you may be right that in the near term, it's going to be a matter of moving the chips around on the table more than getting a huge new infusion, but we're going to push for it because that's what we came here to do. And I cannot tell you how many people in, not just in the Syracuse City School District, but in districts in more rural areas where they also are dramatically underfunded, and in the districts where they have the funding that would be allocated anyway, they recognize that school funding for everyone is crucial. And the more we rely on property taxes to fund education, the more unequal and the more of a drag on local economies it's going to be. And so the state needs to get this right. And so I'm optimistic that there is a critical mass of people in the Senate for sure, and I believe in the Assembly as well, who are going to be fighting this fight, and that we will see changes.
Assemblyman, how do you see this?
Well, I'm hopeful. You know, I don't disagree with the statement the senator has just made. And I'd love to see the formula changed so that we start getting more of the available funds to the districts that need them the most. I mean, that's what we've been fighting for I don't want to say how many decades now. But anyway, it is.
As long as I've been in Syracuse, I've had a conversation.
Okay. So, I don't disagree, and I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to move that a little bit, and I don't know if it's going to mean, as the senator said, that there's going to be billions and billions of dollars more in the education budget, because where are you going to get it from? And that's the problem that we deal with every winter.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guests are New York State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli and State Senator Rachel May. In the last segment here, I want to try to squeeze a couple different topics, and both of them are big and complex, but I'll try. First one is something we haven't talked about yet, which is the New York Health Act. This would arguably represent the single biggest policy change in New York State, I think, since the establishment of an income tax. The act would replace health insurance companies and make New York State government the payer of health care costs for all New Yorkers. The Assembly has passed it for several years. It's not been voted on yet in the Senate, and Democratic senators have previously signed on as co-sponsors of the legislation. The new Democrats, who successfully challenged Democratic incumbents in the Democratic primary and then won in the general election, including my guest today, Senator May, have been very vocally supportive of a single-payer health care system called for by this Health Act. And they've been more vocal than the senators they replaced. They made it a centerpiece of their campaigns. The governor, however, has sounded lukewarm on this idea at the state level, and Senate Democratic leadership has seemed to back away in recent weeks from putting it at the top of the list. That's my synopsis, anyway. So it is my impression. First of all, let me direct this. I know that, Senator May, you want to speak to this, but let me ask the Assemblyman this question first, since he's had the sense of the past and the history there. It is my impression that some of the support that this bill has received in the past has been somewhat symbolic in nature, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but still it's support that is voiced when the bill did not have a realistic chance of passage. So now it's real, right? Now it's more real. So briefly, if you can, because I do want to talk about another topic as well with the time we have left. How do you see this playing out? Is this just going to be slow walked and back put on the back burner?
Well, I don't think it's something that's going to be put on the back burner, but I think you're absolutely correct. I've been on this bill for I don't know how long. I was on the Health Committee. Dick Gottfried has had this bill forever.
Well, this has been his crusade, I
correct.
Think. Again, as
and,
long as I've been in I've the been state, a, as I've seen him work this.
I've been a co-sponsor on that bill. Yeah, probably for as many years as I've been in the Assembly. So it is problematic, though, and you stated it very succinctly. It's symbolic because if you read the bill, there's problems with the bill. And there's problems that are going to cost New York State a ton of money and may lose us federal funds.
Right.
So unless those things are changed, I don't think that you're going to see the bill pass. Because we just can't afford it. It will blow the budget out of the water, and I think it'll be very problematic. But they can be. And, a variation or an amended bill hopefully can be worked on, and something that we – I think the bottom line is I want to make sure personally that every single person in New York State has health care, period. So how we get to that goal is what I'm going to be striving for over the next couple of years. And with a Senate that is more amenable to doing something like that, I feel hopeful, at least, that we're going to be able to move that bar.
Senator May, if your leadership in the Senate and the governor do decide to kind of slow walk this and study it and, you know, not I mean, I personally would be surprised if there's a vote a vote on the floor on this bill this year, but that's my own take. But anyway, if the governor and the leadership decide to slow walk this idea, how are you going to react to that? And how are your colleagues that are newly elected going to react to that?
Right. So I think slow walk is the wrong term.
Okay.
The point of this is, as Assemblyman Magnarelli said, to get everyone health care. And I also believe that if it's done right, it can save New Yorkers money and improve our health outcomes. So the point is to get it right. And the thing about the bill is, when you're saying symbolic, basically a bill has been voted on year after year in the Assembly in the knowledge that it wasn't ever going to come up for a vote in the Senate. So they didn't really take the time to do the hearings, to bring all of the stakeholders into the conversation, to really figure out how to solve those problems that, he's right, there are problems in the bill. So the chair of the Health Committee in the Senate is absolutely committed to moving this forward, to holding those hearings, to going around the state and really plugging the holes in the bill. And I've talked to him, and he says, you know, we have one chance to get this right. If we get it wrong, then that becomes a symbol all around the country for why healthcare for all doesn't work. And so we've got to get it right. And so it's not slow walking, it's doing it right and solving problems rather than just notching up a legislative victory.
Well, we're at the end of our time. There are some questions about the governor and his relationship to the legislature and some follow-up questions on this health act that I want to put to you. We'll do that in a conversation on the web portion that listeners can find on WRVO.org. But for now, that was State Senator Rachel May and State Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli. I want to thank the two of you for taking the time to talk with me.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you, Grant. This was fun.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest. And again, for an additional segment to the conversation you've just heard, please go to WRVO.org. And please tune in again to WRVO Public Media for more Conversations in the Public Interest. Welcome to this additional segment of the Campbell Conversations. I'm talking with Senator Rachel May and Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli, and we're looking toward this year's legislative session. At the end of the broadcast portion, we were talking about the New York Health Act and its prospects this year. I wanted to extend that conversation here and then ask a couple other questions about Governor Cuomo and the relationship there with the state and the legislature. But let me just throw out this question to the two of you. It's kind of a question in the weeds policy-wise, but it is something that I do wonder about. Having a little bit of knowledge in healthcare policy and politics, it has to do with the problem, and I saw this in Vermont when Vermont was considering a single-payer system or some other kind of system of guaranteed healthcare access. The problem with the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, ERISA, it's more generally known as. And basically, to put this into a nutshell, as I understand it and how it played out there, It was a law originally designed for the protection of retirement benefits and health care, but it provides for self-insured organizations to be free of state regulation and to be governed under federal regulations. So Syracuse University, where we're talking right now, self-insures. It's protected under the ERISA provisions. One of the things that Vermont ran into was a problem of how can you take a state set of regulations that will then, in a sense, require these organizations to participate in the broader state-level thing that's going to be replacing the whatever the status quo was. How does the New York Act deal with that? I've looked online, and I've not found any kind of explanation of how the ERISA hurdle gets dealt with, because you in New York State, you've got a lot of large organizations that self-insure and could, at least as far as I understand it, be kind of immune from this new system. Do either of you want to comment on that? Have you heard about this?
I haven't heard about that specifically, but there are other similar problems with groups that have free health insurance, for example, that don't want to be part of this program. So I would say the way you deal with that is you make it an attractive program. And for my belief, and I haven't had a chance to sit down with people in HR at Syracuse University and talk about this, but my belief is that for large employers like that who are not paying million-dollar salaries, they're paying, you know, more moderate salaries, that the New York Health Act would save them money. Mm. And so if you're in that position, it would also benefit them enormously, I think, because you would be able to decouple health insurance from employment at some level. So people who are part-time employees would still get covered with health insurance. And I think it's a real problem for the universities, or they feel like they're not walking the walk sometimes because they have a lot of adjuncts who aren't necessarily getting the benefits that they should get. So I think for a lot of large employers that they would find it was in their interest to do this. Mm.
So they might just voluntarily choose to participate in it. I see. Well, let me throw out another question. And Assemblyman, I'll direct this one to you initially. But when political scientists look at different state legislatures, one of the things they've concluded about New York's is that it's pretty sensitive to organized interest groups, that they have a lot of influence and power on how things work, and particularly in the details of how laws are written. That's my sense, too, over the years. And I can think in the healthcare field, I see examples of this in terms of who gets what. So one of the things I saw in Vermont, because I watched this process fairly close up for a couple of years, is that when the legislature was beginning to get into the details of this and what's going to be covered and who's going to be in the program and considered a practitioner and all of that, there was this, as you might imagine, a flocking through the Capitol of different organized interest groups. And the dynamic that began to get in place was adding more than subtracting. And so I would anticipate that if this process were to happen in New York State, we'd see that perhaps on steroids of different groups, you know, lobbying to get their protection or to get treated well in this new program. And I guess where I'm going with this is one of the advantages that gets put forward for single payer by advocates of single payer around the world is that it provides a good firm top cap on how much gets spent. It's a vehicle to sort of put the brakes on spending. I'm wondering if that's going to actually take place in New York State. We might have actually the opposite dynamic. This program in the end becomes very expensive.
I don't know how to answer that. Was that a question?
Was that a question?
Really? I think you're. Yeah. You're teaching right now. So
I threw it out as a possibility. Let's put it that way. Okay. What do you think about that possibility?
I think it's a very real possibility. Having been in Albany the length of time that I've been, there will be pressures from various organizations on the legislature, on the governor's office, to do X, Y, and Z. In favor of whatever organization it is. And I think we need to do our job and make sure we're taking care of the people that we represent. And that's always been my goal. It's what I strive to do. You know, sometimes people talk about lobbyists in very bad terms. On the other hand, sometimes they give you things that are eye-opening and maybe something you've missed. Mm-hmm. The idea is to listen, not commit right off the bat, and try to make decisions based on what's good for the people you represent.
And there's another question I'll put, and then we'll leave the Health Act alone. But and this has been set forward by critics. And, Senator, I'll direct this to you, and you have responded to this before in previous programs, but I did want to put it out there again, is New York already is relative to the nation, pretty good about covering its population. The last figure that I saw was that 6% of the population is uninsured. That's not bad. I mean, 94% is not
bad.
Unless you're in the 6%. But still, even systems that are supposedly universal don't get 100%. There are always folks that fall through. So we're getting kind of up to the ceiling there. So the obvious sort of criticism of this is, okay, why do you restructure the entire thing in order to get the last 6%? Why do you take this huge risk with a fifth of New York State's economy, put it under the control of New York State, that has a spotty track record at best at running things? for that? Just give us that argument.
Right. So 6% is still a lot of people, and they will probably be the most vulnerable people out there. So that's a problem. But it's also the case that the people who do have coverage are facing higher and higher costs, greater and greater deductibilities and, you know, copays and all kinds of things, mm-hmm. and are rationing their care. And so you end up with a situation where people are still using emergency rooms as their primary care places of, you know, to get their care because they either aren't insured or they can't afford the costs otherwise. And
that's expensive.
That is expensive for all of us. And that pushes all of our costs up. So the whole idea of the single payer is you internalize all of those costs and then you start having some control that actually pushes people away from using the most expensive kind of care to using the kind of care that's really going to help them prevent the illnesses in the first place. When I think about it, I think about kids in school who may be struggling in school because they can't see the board or they can't hear the teacher or they've got a toothache or something like that. And the New York Health Act would cover dental and vision and hearing care. It would set kids up for more success and adults too. So it seems like if you really think it through and you really do it right and you get people to buy into it from all the different angles, you can end up with a system that is cheaper and has genuinely better outcomes at levels that we don't even think of as necessarily healthcare outcomes, but, for example, school outcomes, that kind of thing. So that's where I'm coming from with this, and I think it's worth fighting for.
So let me shift the topic now. We are talking a couple days prior to the governor's State of the State address, but he has made other speeches in recent weeks. And so it's clear, I think, since the election that the governor has continued to aggressively counter the Trump administration. In a recent speech, he set up New York State as analogous to the original 13 colonies, resisting the tyranny of England. Among other things he said was, and this is a quote, "As our forefathers rebelled against England, resenting the king's values and abuse, let us announce New York's rebellion from the current federal policies." He's also talked about a, quote, "federal assault on New York." So Assemblyman Magnarelli, as someone with a bit of experience in the institution here, do you think it's appropriate and more narrowly, is it politically smart for the governor speaking on behalf of the state to set up this kind of opposition with the federal government?
I'm not going to try to state whether it's the smart thing to do,
okay.
But I do believe it's the right thing to do.
Okay.
I'm okay
with
that.
Tell us about that.
Well, I think it's time that we start standing up for the things that we believe in. I don't believe the federal government is doing right by the people it's representing, especially here in New York State. It's not the way we do things. And for the governor to be speaking out and saying that we're not going to take this anymore, I have no problem with that at all. On that score, I'm happy that he's doing it, and I don't have a problem with it.
Senator May, your thoughts on that?
Well, we have a president who's from New York State, and I think it's appropriate for the state to push back and really be out there being vocal. I think that's not a bad role for the governor to be playing.
And since you're both Democrats and you've both expressed support for this, this is my final question. Senator, I'll start with you, but put it to both of you. You know, there are still conservatives in New York State. Not a majority, apparently, but there are still a lot of them, particularly upstate. So what are they to do with this kind of rhetoric from the governor? I mean, where does this leave them in terms of a political home in the state?
Well, I think the governor speaks for himself and for his party and for the state. And I think he's right. I think even conservatives in New York can see that a lot of the policies, for example, the tax policy, is going to hurt a lot of people in New York State. So that at that level, I I suspect that people will we need a bully pulpit to counteract the rhetoric coming out of the White House and out of right-wing media, and I think it's very appropriate to have it there. Conservatives in New York State have a home, and they have a lot of representation, and those of us who represent districts that are kind of mixed are listening. I don't think they have to worry about having no voice at all, but I do think it's appropriate for the governor to be being straightforward about some of the ways that this affects us in New York State.
Assemblywoman Magnarelli, the last word on this.
Well, I feel basically the same way. I think it's appropriate for him to speak his mind on this. He is elected by the people of the state of New York, might be from one area more than another, but he still is, he got the majority of the votes. The other thing, though, and, when I think of conservatives, I think of more or less upstate New York and rural areas are more conservative than the rest of the state. But even they have problems with what's coming out of the federal government. Things like on immigration. Mm-hmm. You talk to the farmers. I have some in my district, believe it or not. And they're concerned about where are they going to get the workers? How are they going to get the crops in? I mean, these are conservative issues or just issues that affect people in the state of New York. I think if the governor continues to speak for everybody on those issues, I think there's enough of them that the federal government is that even the conservatives see that what he's saying may be very appropriate for everybody. So I'm okay with it.
Well, why? Oh, yes, absolutely, Senator.
Can I just add that on the environment, this is really true.
Oh,
I think
my gosh,
conservatives.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about that.
Oh.
Go
conservative,
ahead.
There's a reason why conservation has the same root as conservative. People care about the health of the environment, clean water, clean air, and the future of their children. And that is one area where this federal administration is falling down and really doing major damage. And I think the governor has been pushing back on that in a really constructive way.
Right. I agree.
Well, we'll leave it there. And again, I want to thank the two of you for taking the time to speak with me. You've been listening to a conversation with Assemblyman Bill Magnarelli and Senator Rachel May. We've been talking about the upcoming state legislative session.